afternoon, everybody, and welcome back to the Toe Meets Leather podcast. I'm Logan, and here with me today are Tommy and Andrew. Nigel couldn't make it. He was in too much shock after the Tennessee win. So how are y'all doing today, guys? I can tell Tommy's doing really good. He's staring at me like, are you really going to do this every week? And I know Andrew was shirtless earlier, so you can't be feeling that great right now.
I mean, usually you feel better with less clothes on, at least from my experience.
Yeah.
I think it completely depends on the situation.
I mean, I saw you earlier rubbing your nipples. You were giving us a show, so it can't be as good now that you got clothes on, I would imagine. Anyway, we were a college football podcast, everybody. All right, we're going to kick off this week. We're going to start with the what this year's college football season continues to give us, our new segment, What the Fuck Happened at the End of That Game? So this week we're looking at Tennessee versus Georgia. And Tennessee continues to be, in my mind, the new Dukes of Hazzard. It's like every week we just see them get into worse and worse positions. And every week we're just like, well, how are them Vols going to get themselves out of this one? And somehow they pull off some crazy stunt that ends up winning the game for them. This time, Georgia went down and scored with 10 seconds left in the game. Georgia, being Georgia, got a penalty for celebrating, pushing back the kickoff by 15 yards. This allowed Tennessee to get a quick return down to the Georgia 45-yard line with 4 seconds left in the game, I believe. From there, Tennessee threw a Hail Mary, and lo and behold, possibly due to terrible Georgia defense, Tennessee ended up coming up with the ball in the end zone and winning the game. So I would have started with Nigel to rub it in his face, but Tommy, I'll start with you. How much was this on Tennessee versus just Georgia playing very poor defense at the end of the game?
Well, I'm just going to go ahead and say what all the Georgia fans are going to say. Blah, 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 blah. Nick Chubb was out. We would have kicked their ass. Blah, 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 blah. It's not true, but that's what they're going to say. Sony Michel had 16 carries for 91 yards and a touchdown. And then Harrion had 15 carries for 74 yards with no touchdowns. But, you know, they've got enough people. And even Isaiah McKenzie on their wide receiver screens and reverses had 5 carries for 22 yards. So they had 181 yards on the ground. They're going to be able to run the ball no matter what. The fact of the end of the game is just all sides playing poor. I mean, nobody decided to play defense at all. Tennessee stopped playing defense and Georgia stopped playing defense.
Well, right there at the end of the game, I mean, if you didn't see the Georgia touchdown that we talked about beforehand, it's like the corner just stopped in the middle of defending, you know, in the middle of man coverage on the wide receiver. And that's what let the guy get open. And from there, I just thought the game was over. But I was compelled to keep watching after what happened in the UNC-FSU game, which we will get to a little bit later. Andrew, do you think Tennessee is going to keep things exciting for the next couple of weeks, continue to struggle just to dash the hopes of their opponents?
You know, possibly I think the train might stop this week against a pretty good Texas A&M team. You know, the thing about the Georgia-Tennessee game, you go back and watch it, neither team really wanted to win. They kept making mistakes. Georgia gives up a strip sack fumble in the end zone for a touchdown and then throws an interception on the next possession, and Tennessee should just run the ball out, but because Tennessee is awful, apparently, they can't run the ball out, so they kick deep, they pin Georgia deep, Georgia drives down the field. You know, you've got the play you talk about, which all honesty was a beautiful throw by Jacob Eason. You know, very, 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 very poor play by the corner, but, you know, Eason just laid it up exactly where he needed to drop the ball for that wide receiver, and I honestly turned it off after that. I was like, you know, I'm already angry. I don't want to see Georgia win something on some bullshit, you know. And then I turned it back to see what happened, and Tennessee had thrown the score. You know, same thing. Georgia undisciplined, draws penalties, and then, you know, once you get to a Hail Mary like that, you're playing basketball. It's just boxing out and trying to get a rebound, and Tennessee was able to do it.
I will say on the score before by Georgia, my dad was watching the game with me the entire time, and he was racking on Eason the whole game. After that pass, he was like, "You know, Eason's not as bad a quarterback as I'm giving him crap for." But no, like when I saw that play and what I keep hearing, like I just flew up to Michigan today, I was hearing all kinds of Georgia fans in the airport, like, "Aren't you supposed to put defenders at the goal line so they can get in front of the ball?" Yeah, clearly that did not pan out for them, you know? Let's see.
I don't know. You know, you've got your end game that you practice a little bit, but I'm almost of the idea of why not just play a normal, you know, you kind of know what they're going to do, so you play some normal schemes that you play. I think sometimes you're not going to get the kind of reps on an end game scenario that you would like to, so why not just play what you normally play, just back them off a little bit. But you know, there's a reason that I'm sitting on my couch.
Yeah, that's true. Well, you might be in the running for that Georgia Tech job, but apparently you just don't want it that much. No. All right. Well, I will say that was the highlight of my weekend because we're gonna move on to our next topic. Georgia Tech sucks. Okay, fine. I don't have much to say about it. Andrew, take it from me. You giving me.
So, Georgia Tech actually outgained Miami on offense and stopped Miami on third down 6 out of 7 times. You know, that game, the thing about it to me is Georgia Tech is obviously better than they were last year. I think across the board, I think the defense, as much maligned as they have been, are especially statistically in the middle of the pack. Now, they haven't played a lot of great offenses. Miami was really the first one they played, but I mean, they still closed Miami down to pretty, only gave up 21 points. Now, it may have been a different game if, you know, Georgia Tech doesn't have those two fumbles that go for touchdowns. But to me, I think Georgia Tech's made some strides in the right direction. I think that they're a lot better of a team on both sides of the ball than were last year. Obviously, the game against Pitt this weekend is really going to kind of show if Georgia Tech's going to be able to be maybe an 8-4 type team, or if it's going to be, you know, a 6-6 or worse season.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, that's going to be the fan reaction is like a lot of people are just not going to be happy with it. But we did play good defense. And I think, as I sent out as a message, we were 2 touchdowns away from having a tie game. I wonder where we could have gotten 2 touchdowns back. Maybe if the O-line had blocked and not caused some, allowed them to hit our quarterback and get some fumbles off there. Tommy, is it just the O-line? Again, as Andrew pointed out, we are still gaining a lot. The defense is looking good. Like, why are we struggling so much, especially at home?
You know, right after the game, I was super, super angry, and I said some things that probably shouldn't have been said. But I'm still starting to get to the point where when I'm watching, there's some disconnect that's happening with this team, and I don't know if it's player pride or it's coaching, but there comes times where you watch them. I mean, what the defense did, like shutting down 6 of 7 third downs, like Andrew said, and the amount of times that they got into the backfield and actually hurried Kaya or got to Kaya for sacks, shows that they're capable. But then, you know, they have a drive where they give out 4 plays in a row for 74 yards and it ends in a touchdown. And I mean, they gain 12 to 20 yards each play. So it's not even like, oh, they just kind of did 2 good plays and then 1 bad. And then on the offense, it's like, well, towards the end of the game, they started moving the ball pretty well. And, you know, in the second quarter, we scored 14 points because they were moving the ball well. But then you have those 2 plays with the fumbles into the touchdown, and you have back-to-back 3 and outs where, I mean, when the play's over, there are 4 Georgia Tech guys on the ground and no Miami players, which it just shows effort. It's a lack of effort. It's a lack of pride. They're capable of much more, and they don't string a full game together. So, until they actually decide to string a full game together, they're going to be second, third to last in the Coastal.
I mean, we are certainly worse than Wake Forest now, which makes me a little sad. But come on, we got to be better than Syracuse, and we did beat Boston College. All right, anyway, yeah, maybe we should just move to Atlantic. Maybe we'd have a better shot. Speaking of the Atlantic, let's move on to the best game in my mind of the weekend. Louisville at Clemson. That game turned into a shootout, especially near the end there. I was a little disappointed that it didn't come down to one of the big-time quarterbacks at the end. Lamar Jackson hit his receiver, and he just kind of stepped out of bounds without trying to get the first down is what it seemed like. Tommy, did you catch the entirety of the game? Do you have a comment on that last play?
Well, right before the last play, they had that false start too. So you get that back and they have a first down, or actually he might have been in the end zone. Wide open screen pass like that. So dumb mental mistake there. As far as the receiver getting out of bounds, I don't know why, when you know it's possibly the last play of the game, you're not fighting for every possible yard you could have. Correct me if I'm wrong, but they had a timeout, so even if he's down in bounds, they can always call the timeout to stop the clock. So just mental errors down at the end. But, you know, overall, both teams played a very good game. If Louisville could get their second quarterback, the second quarter of the game, not, like, backup quarterback, and play that quarter over, I think you look at a completely different game. But giving up 28 points in a single quarter is what really kind of killed them.
You mean the first quarter? Yeah.
Second quarter. Nobody scored in the first quarter.
Okay. That's not how I remember it. But anyway, yeah, it was an interesting matchup. I think they kind of shut down Clemson early in the third quarter, but it was – oh, you're right. Sorry, second quarter, not second half. What am I hearing? Anyway, yeah. Anyway, Andrew, I'm going to stop making a fool of myself. What were your thoughts on the game?
You know, it was definitely really – it was the game we expected it to be. You know, both quarterbacks made plays. It was a good bit of offense, but, you know, the defense has still made some plays. I think the biggest thing that killed Louisville was giving up those points early, and then their top corner got hurt right towards the end of the third quarter, I believe. He had intercepted Watson three times. I believe all three interceptions were made by his name was Alexander, and he got hurt. And almost immediately you saw Clemson and Watson start to pick on the new corner that was in the game. And I think that really kind of shook up the Louisville defense and really kind of took away some what they wanted to do and their ability to defend the pass. You know, and Watson made the plays he needed to make to win the game. It was, I mean, as an uninvested observer, I think it was a great game. I think we got everything we wanted. I mean, to me, it just shows that both are great teams. You know, Louisville, in my mind, if they win out and Clemson wins out and wins the conference, I'd have hard trouble not putting both those teams in the playoffs, especially if Louisville goes in and beats an undefeated Houston team later in the year.
Yeah, that's a trick right there. I mean, because clearly Clemson would have to go to the ACC championship. But, God, what do you do if you end up in that situation where you're stuck with Louisville winning out, beating Houston, and then you've got the other G5 teams that are undefeated? We're going to talk in more detail about that a little later. But let's go on to the other Atlantic team, which is struggling a bit, and the game that I'm sure Elizabeth will never let us live down. UNC beating FSU. I'm going to be honest. I didn't catch much of that game. I saw the score. UNC was well ahead, and they let FSU come back into the game. I was impressed with the field goal kicker strategy of missing the extra point so that he could come back in and kick the winning field goal. It was a bold decision on his part. It made him look the hero. You know, I think that was a smart move in the end of the day. Andrew, how much crap are you getting for your pick right now?
A lot. You know, that game was interesting to me because there was a couple of times North Carolina was driving to score and they fumbled the ball and Florida State recovers. They hit Francois and sack him in the end zone. It's originally called a safety on the field. It's reviewed and they say that he was not in the end zone, and Florida State actually drives and scores a touchdown on that drive. So, I mean, to me, there were multiple occasions where Carolina had a chance to put the game away, or would have, for all intents and purposes, put the game away. And the way those breaks happened helped FSU to get back in the game. And it was one of those where you have a team like North Carolina that's really not used to being in this kind of position against a team like Florida State. You kind of expect when those breaks go the other way, you really have to see, do they fold or are they able to rally and win the game? And North Carolina was really able to come together, rally, and do what they needed to do to win the game. And I think that bodes really well going on into the season, because it shows a level of mental toughness and a degree of the ability to overcome not getting the breaks that are going to be helpful to really any team that's out there trying to win games.
So, Tommy, turning to you, FSU was supposed to be the other team in the ACC competing for a playoff spot with Clemson. Now they lost horribly to Louisville on the road, and then after dropping this game at home against UNC, granted it's a very good UNC team, does FSU have something to worry about? Are they falling apart under the pressure maybe?
You know, FSU's a pretty young team, so for them to have a step back like this, I wouldn't worry about it too much as them. I mean, obviously this year is not going the way they'd like it to, but they've lost to very good teams. I mean, Louisville played with Clemson, and those two teams, I mean, Andrew was making a valid case for the potential of both of them making the playoff. And, you know, there is an argument there if they both end up winning out. And then they lost to a UNC team that's very talented, a very strong offense. They gave up 405 yards to Trubisky alone, and then another 133 on the ground. So I wouldn't be too worried about it. They were close in this one. The biggest issue that Florida State has is, it kind of goes back to when they had Jameis Winston too, is not starting games off the way they should. I mean, 7 points in the first half and then scoring 28 in the second half, that's not how you're going to continually sustain wins outside of FSU a couple years ago or Auburn a couple years ago luck season. So they need to start working on coming out of the gate strong, playing well in the first half, and then finishing stronger. An interesting thing about UNC is I think they kind of have the opposite problem. I think UNC usually comes out pretty strong in most of their games. You know, I'm kind of looking down their score lines, and it looks like as the game goes on, they kind of fall apart. You know, they're very strong in the first and second quarter, and then third and fourth quarter, their scoring offense actually drops considerably. I'm looking at an average of 7.5 points less scored in the second half than in the first on the season. So both teams kind of have the opposite problem as far as completing a whole game. They need to work on the half that they're not, either in FSU's case, coming out strong, or UNC finishing the game strong.
Gotcha. All right. Well, I mean, it's an interesting spot to be in, and I think UNC should certainly be happy now that they've bounced back after that tough loss to UGA, who is looking less and less like a team they should have lost to. But, you know, we're probably going to see another good season out of them, where they started off rough and now they come in and they're not going to lose anything the rest of the way. Florida State, I think the rest of their schedule isn't too bad, but they've got a big one coming up this week at Miami. Moving on. Oh, my favorite topic of the week. We're going out west. So, Tommy, I believe the term you used at the beginning of the year was, I was crazy for believing the Wolfpack could beat Stanford in the Pac-12. And I will not deny, I'm probably crazy for a couple of reasons, but it doesn't appear that one of those reasons is the Wolfpack being superior to Stanford. So that game was, I do throw this word around a lot, dominant, domination, you know, but in this particular case, I think Washington earned it. They did totally dominate Stanford in that game. I think other than a missed pass to a linebacker in the end zone and allowing Stanford to score, it was pretty much a perfect game out of Washington. So, Tommy, how are you feeling now about the Huskies?
First off, they're the Huskies, not the Wolfpack. So if you were saying that you picked the Wolfpack to beat Stanford, I'd still say you're crazy, because I don't think NC State has a chance if that game were to happen. And I believe what I said is that Washington has a lot of talent, but they haven't proved it yet. So they have all the keys there, all the all the tools there to have a great season. They just need to string it together. And guess what? They're stringing it together, and sticking it to Stanford like they did is definitely something worth worth praising and worth taking a second look at. I think after this game, you know, the Pac-12 was one of those conferences that we were all kind of looking at as the one of the ones that could be left out of the playoffs. I think Washington in this statement win over Stanford kind of builds their resume in a really good way, and really puts them in a position to be able to make a contention for that playoff at the end of the season, if they continue to win games dominantly and finish with an undefeated record.
Yeah, I mean, all that said, this was at home for them, and I'm not sure how the quarterback performs on the road. Obviously, they struggled last week against Arizona, so, you know, I'm not going to take it all away from you. They do need to perform, but I think you're under-expressing your statement there. Anyway, Andrew, as far as Stanford goes, I think your hype on them was for the O-line. The O-line was really struggling out there, giving up sacks. And right now, after that performance, we're just not seeing anything out of Christian McCaffrey. He got 49 yards on the ground this game. If you look, obviously, at the kick returns, he got more. But we're really looking for him to perform and start putting the team on his back, and he's just not able to do that. What are your thoughts on Stanford, and how do they put the pieces back together from this point?
Well, first of all, I owe a severe apology to Husky Nation. Washington, I was wrong. I didn't think you would be this good this early. You've definitely surprised me. You know, the thing about Stanford is I think they still had a bit of a quarterback question. You know, they played both Ryan Burns and Keller Christ. And the thing about it is Washington's really talented on defense, and they were able to sell out to stop the run and really did a great job of doing that. I think the other thing that Washington's really good at is they can get a lot of pressure with just their front four, which allows them to do a little more things with coverage. You know, to me, it sets up Washington as being the team to beat in the Pac-12 North, especially with Washington State beating Oregon. You know, I think that's another one that it kind of surprised me, you know, especially how far the Ducks have fallen. You know, they're 0-2 and at the bottom of the Pac-12 North. You know, I mean, we may end up with a scenario where the Pac-12 North comes down to the Apple Cup at the end of the season.
Yeah, that's I mean, we did talk about that potential earlier in the year. It's just I didn't expect that after Washington State started off by losing to Eastern Washington.
And Boise.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I could see it against Boise. Boise's got talent. But anyway, that's a bowl game I'd like to see, Washington versus Boise. Come on, Chris Peterson, take it back to your old team. All right. moving on. So Baylor struggled but is still undefeated against Iowa State. We'll make this short. Do you see any significant concerns in that Baylor game, Andrew?
I didn't really get a chance to watch of it. I mean, you know, the big thing is Baylor obviously didn't play very well on defense, and that's something especially in the Big 12, you know, it's kind of a defense need not apply league, but the problem is if you get into shootouts, you better be able to win them. And I think there's some other teams in that league that might be a little bit better on offense.
Well, especially, yeah, considering what they're given credit for. We did see a lot of games like that. There were a lot of track meets just across the board. Teams not playing defense. Notre Dame at Syracuse, you kind of expected that. Notre Dame's defensive talents have just disappeared. Granted, they just fired their D coordinator, so I'm not sure what they're going to have to do to get that back together. Texas at Oklahoma State was a shootout. Oklahoma at TCU was one of those weird games where we expected both those teams to be better than they were, and that one was just gunslinging all the way. And I know you know there's a trend there. Most of those teams are in the Big 12, so just not a lot of defense to be had. Tommy, I'll ask you, though, one last team before we move on to our next topic. Colorado has done some very impressive stuff up to this point in the season. Should we be giving them more credit out west?
You know, the wins that you put on Colorado for the past 2 weeks are Oregon State and Oregon. So they've pretty much dominated that. But they've got a series of tests coming up. They have to play a Southern Cal team that seemed to bounce back really well, an Arizona State team that has a pretty high-flying offense, but I think Colorado can win that one. Then they have to play Stanford and UCLA, and an Arizona team that has a chance of beating them. So the next 4 weeks are really where we're going to figure out whether Colorado is that good or Oregon State is just that bad.
I mean, to be fair, I think Oregon State is that bad, but Colorado now owns the state of Oregon, so more power to them. You know. Wait, is weed legalized in Oregon?
Was it ever illegal there?
I don't know. That might be it. They were getting the home field advantage. Anyway, moving on. We're going to go on to our next topic. So, Andrew, this was something you brought up. I don't see it happening anymore because Houston does have to face against Louisville. But we were talking about the prospect of potentially having three different undefeated G5 schools making it to the end of the year. You know, you got Houston's got to go through Louisville, we just talked about. Boise State could potentially go undefeated. Western Michigan could go undefeated with the rest of their schedule. Well, actually, Boise State will have to play San Diego State, but one of those two teams could go undefeated.
San Diego State got whipped by South Alabama this weekend.
I didn't actually catch that. I saw the start. I saw them score.
It was South Alabama's first ever win over a ranked team.
Good for them. My gosh.
You actually, though, in the Mountain West, you could also have an undefeated Air Force if they beat Boise State the last game of the season.
So like we said, there's still plenty of undefeateds potentially out there. And I mean, the fact of the matter is a lot of those teams, like we're looking at Western Michigan and Boise State, you know, there's a few games on there where you're like, okay, maybe they lose, but you're expecting them to win most of those matchups. Is there a real possibility that we get three undefeated G5 schools and the playoff? What is the impact on the playoff committee if that happens?
Well, if we get three of them and one of them is Houston, Houston gets, in my mind, should get a playoff bid because they will have beaten Louisville and Oklahoma, who in my mind are pretty good programs. You know, unfortunately, their conference schedule is what it is. You know, and it'll also kind of depend on the other teams and what the other conferences have done. If you don't have a lot of undefeateds and they're the only undefeated, then I could see it being a little bit different. You know, I would like for them to get a Houston a chance, but if you end up with four undefeated conference champions, you know, it's kind of hard to argue that they should be in there over them. You know, and then you'd have an undefeated Western Michigan and say an undefeated Boise State or Air Force out of the Mountain West. It would be interesting to see what the New Year's Six Bowls do because they're only required to take one of those teams, which I believe would be Houston as the highest rated unless Houston makes the playoffs, and then it would probably be Boise State. But unfortunately, I don't think the other teams really, even if they're undefeated, get that much of a bump because they're still tied in with their conference bowl requirements. And I don't see New Year's Six Bowls jumping major conference teams, even for an undefeated, say, Western Michigan.
Which is a damn shame. Well, maybe they'll get sent back to Panama or someplace. I don't get to the tropics for the winter. I think they would prefer that, given their general location. Tommy, I'm going to go to the end of this other end of the spectrum with you. So let's say two ACC teams do get into the conference, and we're just going to go with hypotheticals because there's a lot of weird things that need to happen for that to occur. But let's say two ACC teams get in, and we've got an undefeated like Western Michigan or Boise State still out there that has to get left out because of that. What is the reaction? Do we need to suddenly expand the playoffs now?
Well, the first thing I'll say is we've got a lot of football left. So I honestly don't think we end up with that many undefeateds like every other year, it seems. College football has a way of working itself out. in that end. I mean, you look at Marshall last year was the other the big like potential undefeated, and that didn't work out. So I don't think we get there. And I don't think you have two ACC teams. I mean, I get what Andrew's saying. I get the argument that Louisville and Clemson, if they both win out the rest, Clemson wins the ACC title. How do you keep Louisville out? Because their only loss is to Clemson, who just gave themselves an automatic berth, essentially. But, I mean, there's five Power Five conferences. At that point, Houston's knocked out. So, I mean, if Washington continues on their path, you've got Michigan and Ohio State. They both seem to be on tears out of the Big Ten, out of the Big 12. You know, you've got Oklahoma State that has a couple questionable ones in there, but they're probably the conference that'll be on the outside looking in. But I don't think you can put the two in. And then Alabama is your fourth one. So you look at the Big 12 being out, but I don't think you can put a Louisville, a one-loss Louisville, in over a undefeated Michigan or Ohio State or an Alabama or a Clemson or a Washington. So I don't think we get there.
I gotta say, as an Alabama fan, it's good to hear you say, "Oh, it's not the SEC. It's Alabama." Anyway,
I mean, it is Alabama and the 13 Dwarves.
Yeah, I mean, they already, I mean, Ole Miss is out and LSU is crumbling. So, and then Georgia, Tennessee, and Florida all seem to be struggling every week in and week out. So it's pretty much Alabama's game to lose at this point.
How are the Vols going to get themselves out of this one? All right. Well, we're going to move on. Andrew, why don't you give us the big names and the hard-to-pronounce names of this week in your Fish Report?
Well, again, unfortunately, despite his heroics, the Fish Smithson-led Kansas Jayhawks dropped another game, this time to Texas Tech Red Raiders. Fish pitched in with two solo tackles, two assisted tackles, and an interception. So, you know, he tried, but unfortunately, Kansas is still Kansas.
I want to say I am impressed because we did just pick this guy for his name, but he's really playing pretty well.
I believe he was a second team All Big 12 selection last year. So I mean, he's definitely a guy who, if you're going to pick a guy on Kansas to make plays, he's the one that's going to do it. He's got 12 solo tackles, two interceptions, and two pass breakups this year. His brother from another mother, Weston Steelhammer, pretty much won the Air Force Navy game. Two solo tackles, but his bigger contribution was his two interceptions of Will Worth, the Navy quarterback, that helped lead Air Force to a victory and a leg up in their chase for the Commander-in-Chief trophy. He's got 11 solo tackles, one tackle for loss, two picks, and two PBUs for the season. You know, I got to give it a shout out to Jake Browning at Washington, who I didn't really have as much faith in because he's a true sophomore, as a young kid. But I mean, he's put together a great year. Against Stanford, he was 15 of 21 for 210 yards and three touchdowns. You know, I mean, he's what makes that Washington offense click, and he's really done a great job. And then a shout out to Logan Woodside, the quarterback at Toledo, who in a 2-point loss to BYU, Woodside went 30 of 38 for 505 yards and five touchdowns in a 2-point loss.
Holy shit. How does no one talk about these MAC quarterbacks? You had Bowling Green last year, and now Toledo putting up ridiculous numbers.
I mean, you know, you see these guys that just sling the ball. I mean, you look at what Eric Dungy's done at Syracuse. Syracuse isn't winning games, but good gracious, are they putting up numbers?
Yeah, fair enough. Hey, man, if you don't play defense, you just get the ball more.
I mean, it's worked for the Big 12 for quite a while.
Oh, man. All right, well, Tommy, I don't want to leave you out. I want you to key in with some of your useless facts of the week. Sadly, Nigel's not here. We don't have any conspiracy theories, and we are going to shut down the stock market for the time being.
You know, I did talk to Nigel today, and his conspiracy theory, just for food for thought, is how many coaches is Nick Saban responsible for getting fired? At this point, Nigel is attributing the firing of Mark Richt at Georgia from last year, and he's attributing less miles to Saban because they look at, if you look at both those programs, it's like, oh, we're getting the same talent as Alabama. Why aren't we winning games like them? So that's his conspiracy theory. As far as the useless stat of the week, I'm going to talk about penalties and whether or not penalty yards per game means anything. Just so you guys are aware, the three worst teams right now in the nation as far as penalty yards a game they've given up is going to be Marshall at 128 and San Diego State at 127. Both teams lost this weekend. And then at 126 is Louisville. So Louisville, after their tear and the close game against Clemson, they're giving up an average of 90.4 yards per game in penalties, and they have 47 penalties on the year. So they're averaging just under 9.5 penalties a game. So on the other end of the spectrum, we've got Navy that is giving up 22.8 yards a game and averaging exactly at 2.5 penalties a game. So just to give you an idea of what this means, it means absolutely nothing, because when I look top to bottom, there's a lot of great teams towards the bottom, like TCU and Louisville and Texas Tech and North Carolina are all over 100 in penalty yards per game. And then at the other end, as far as the least penalized, you have Northwestern, San Jose State, Georgia Tech, Ball State, Connecticut, and Navy. So it almost seems to me that if you get penalized more, you're going to win more games. Another interesting thing is Georgia is at 30 right now, and Tennessee is at 65 as far as penalties per game rankings. So I'm thinking that's why Tennessee won, is because they get penalized more than Georgia does.
Oh, clearly that's the case. First off, though, about your conspiracy theory, is it really a conspiracy theory if it's true? I mean, and are you not blaming the retirement on Steve Spurrier on Nick Saban as well? Like, we got to draw this out. We got to figure there's more coach firings involved with Saban being in college football right now.
Time to do your research, Bama fan.
That'll be for another day, sadly. All right. Well, as always, thank you guys for listening to the Toe Meets Leather podcast. If you have any questions or if you have any topics you'd like us to talk about, send me an email at toemeatleather@gmail.com. And if you'd like to read some of our posts and see our podcast information, you can go to toemeatsleather.net. As always, thanks for listening and have a good rest of your day. Bye-bye.